Yo, check this out. This is Fresh Get Out the China Man with the 2 Live Crew.
Yo, what's up, y'all? It's me, DMC.
What's up, y'all? This is the Floyd Master P.
Yo, check us out. Chuck the Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yella from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DOC.
This is your boy, C-Murder.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfucker.
This is your boy, DJ Paul KOL 365.
Young Dizzy Bomb.
Vice Womp.
Yo, this is DJ Ready Brand.
What up? This is the real Rick Ross. You listen to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
This is a show that shows no limits, broadcast nothing but the real. Interviews with legendary artists, still got love for the underground feel. Rappers with records, reveal that addition to rappers that are coming up, getting put on. We needed a platform to fight the mainstream. The show that you need to be on. Hit up UGS for life on screen and follow with Wizard.com. For all of your needs, production and mixing and mastering, graphics and shadow design. Check out the archives and touch with the shows, study your content and view the digs. Everything free to download and stream. Oh yeah, we deserve the real review.
Unstoppable, we beat, we brought up, it's we represent. All them killers on the mic, and we should love to all your fans.
I'm a madman, going crazy, knocking all you rappers off. It's an aggressive side, E.S.U.G.S. of life, dog. Hip hop ain't dead, represent for the legend. Rapping mumble rappers, so we ain't sitting on the hips. Two pocket beats, dreaming, thank you for the bliss. It's the Murder Master Music Show. Free the homie gang throw. I see these rappers on these streets. I got my job about to blow. Stay up on that raw shit, uncut street shit.
Keep it
live
forever, bitch.
We
coming hella strong. I see you feeding for the show. Like it's a drug, let's get it on.
What's up, everybody? It's your boy, Prez. Welcome to Murder Master Music Show. This episode 643. Man, we got a special show tonight. You know, I've been a music journalist since the 90s. I've been wanting to interview this guy ever since. Finally got the opportunity to do it. We're very, very grateful. I want to welcome the one and only AMG to the show. How you doing, AMG?
What's up, brother? I'm good, man.
Man.
Thank you. I appreciate
huge fan of your work, man. I got Bitch Better Have My Money when it came out. I thought it was one of the best albums of 91, easily, hands down. You know, because there's a lot of competition that year. What was it like to come out that year? You had albums like We Can't Be Stopped, you know what I'm saying? Of course, you know what I'm saying? Your Comrades Quick, Second to None, High C, and then NWA, last album.
Yeah.
What was it like to drop in 91?
It was amazing, you know. Don't forget Death Certificate and Michael Jackson also, like being on the charts,
yeah.
Just being in the Billboard charts, like seeing your name, and you know, just knowing you among the greats, like you got your shot. You know what I mean? It's just amazing, man. It's amazing. You never think you're gonna get to that level. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, 91 was a spectacular year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, you came out the gate, you know what I'm saying, with the album that just right off the bat, you know what I'm saying, it was perceived very well, not only by the fans, you know what I'm saying, but your peers, you know.
Yeah.
When you dropped that album, did you know it would have that big of an impact?
Well, I wrote it over, I guess, from 18 to 20. Because the record came out right before I turned 21. So, you know, I knew what I was going for as far as the type of impact I wanted to make. I thought I had my own lane creatively with the type of, you know, material that I had. So I was just going for it, man. I knew that was going to be the biggest shot I was going to have to take. So I made sure everything was right and exact from the cover to the order of the songs, you know, the samples I used. You know, the likability factor and the wow factor. You know, back then you could still shock people with words and such. So, you know, I just did my thing.
Yeah, oh yeah, most definitely. You had the Big Daddy Kane sample on the Bitch Better Have My Money. You know,
yes, sir.
Kane is like someone everybody likes. Was he someone that you grew up listening to?
Big Daddy Kane, of course. You know.
Yeah.
Bought his first 12-inch, I guess in 87, I said 90. 86, 87, Prism Records, you know, to get into it. Damn, I just liked his name. I was like, Big Daddy Kane, who is this? You know, there wasn't even no videos back then, but, you know, most of the first singles that people came out with, especially in hip-hop. So, yeah, and throughout his, you know, his whole thing. And the funny thing about The Bitch Bear My Money, I always liked that song because I'm a Nice and Smooth fan also, so that was one of my favorite records. And I kept going, nobody's going to use this great sample at the end. You know what I mean? That's Ant Lock, rest in peace. You know, The Bitch Bear My Money. So I wrote a concept around it, finally came up with the beat for it, the track, and then I put it together. And the rest is hip-hop history.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely, man. Now, to rewind a little bit, before the you said you were recording this album for a couple years, from 18 to 20.
No. I was writing it.
Oh, you were writing it. Okay, yeah. My bad. So the concept was there. You just had to put it together. What were you doing at that time when you first started writing this? Were you already in Compton, or were you still in Ohio?
Well, I was born in Brooklyn, New York. I grew up in Ohio. We moved to California when I was 15. So from 1985 till then, you know. So basically, you know, through high school, you know, rapping with your friends, trying to have groups. You know, L.A. is a serious place as far as music. Back then, our dream was to, you know, my little crew we had, we was going to try to do a 12-inch and all that stuff. And the group disbanded. And I, since I'm an only child, I always like groups, you know, like Brotherhood. So when I had to become a solo artist, basically, it was me and my DJ, rest in peace. We called him Mo Doe. Back then, we were spinning TK. And, you know, just doing demos. A buddy from high school, uncle, was a big-time music producer named Wayne Henderson from the Crusaders. You know, I called him for 8 months straight. He finally gave me a date to come in the studio. He liked what he heard. And then he started giving us slots. You know, you guys in this weekend, and we go in there and work on our little demos and stuff like that. So I had from dealing with Greedy Greg, we started on the 4-track, you know, just home recording. Then I moved to a big studio, then back to the 4-track, the 8-track. And basically just making demos. You know, back then, you know, the music producer, especially in hip-hop, you kind of had to do it yourself. So that's when I started jumping on the machines, you know. Started on the 808, Linn Drum, Linn 9000, you know, all the way up to the ST. And that's how I made the first record. Just, you know, sampling and finding grooves and knocking beats out. And, you know, it's a process of, you know, you making everything you can. Then you fine-tuning and all that type of stuff. You're learning how to mix and EQ and all that shit. So the whole process was probably about 4 years long before any records came out. So, like, 16 through 20 was my working years of, you know, leveling off with that.
And honing your craft, so to speak.
When you
first moved, when you first touched down
in 10,000 hours.
Yeah, you gotta get your work in. When you first touched down in L.A., you know, how did you adjust to that versus coming from the Midwest? I mean, was it like a culture shock for you?
Oh yeah, most definitely a culture shock. You know, a city of Los Angeles, multicultural, Latinos, Haitians, Blacks, Whites, Jews, Koreans, Thai. You know, we got the whole mixture of everything. Went to school with everybody. And I grew up in Inglewood, so Inglewood was basically an upper middle class black city, but it still got the street elements. You know, we had the Forum, lot of black businesses, and you know, a lot of flavor, a lot of style. You know, going to school in L.A. from Ohio was totally different because, but you know, when I came here, I was like in the 10th grade. It's like everybody was like a grown person. You know, I was coming from Ohio. I was playing sports and just, you know. Nigga had a paper route and shit. Then you go to L.A., it's like, nigga, you ain't got no gold watch, or you ain't got this, or you ain't got that. You ain't got no Gucci belt. No, you know, it was more like young people, but we were all like 25 years old. So that made me grow up fast out here. And just seeing the street life, you know, the streets is real. Drug game was heavy, you know. We had ballers in class that could leave and answer their pages in school and shit. They were selling dope out of school. You know, it was just like some different shit for me. But, you know, you got to adapt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And most definitely.
Now, Inglewood, that did you know Mac 10 at the time? Because he's around the same age as you. Like, did you know him at school or run into him?
No. I think I'm a few years older than him, but I didn't know. You know, he wasn't Mac 10 back then. I wasn't AMG, so I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, the guys I knew from that era, didn't nobody really make it, you know. It wasn't all that heavy like that. You know, they wasn't signing hip hop like that until the early 90s and shit, especially from LA. You know, we had our record deals come from New York City. So it wasn't even a whole bunch of people getting signed. It wasn't the whole California concept of hip hop yet. You know, they kept calling it gangster rap or West Coast rap, you know, trying to group you into some shit when it's all hip hop, especially if you're on the mic doing good. You know what I mean? That's what it's about.
And right as you touched down, I mean, that's when everything was changing. That's when Ice-T, right around the time he recorded Six in the Morning,
right.
And you had Mecola Records, you know, blowing up over there. So it was a perfect time for you to really get in on the music.
Well, I was more of a fan first, because out here we had K-Day, you know what I mean, K-D-A-Y, 1580 K-Day, and they played rap 24 hours a day. You know, like from 8 to 12, they played slow jams, but other than that, you heard all the new shit on K-Day. So that's what everybody aimed to be on, was K-Day, you know. And then, you know, you go through your phases, you know, we went through our whole shit trying to send demo tapes out, never get heard from and all that type of stuff. You know, the inside track is totally different than being a fan on the outside. And, you know, you're still just trying to make it. You know, you're happy to meet people that made it. You know, I met N.W.A. at, I guess, about 88. They invited me to the We Want Easy video. MC Ren.
Oh, wow. You
I just
was in
told
that
him
video?
That I was there. I wasn't trying to be in the video, but I met the fellas like a day or two before up in Hollywood that I was up there recording. And Ren and them, you know, they invited me. And so we get there, me and my boy went up there. We get there, brought us in. We ate pizza with the fellas and, you know, drank sodas and watched the video get made. So having that inside track, I never forget them days because I wasn't even me yet. You know what I mean? So just seeing somebody do it on that level was incredible.
What was Eazy-E like? Did you get a chance to chop it up with him?
All the time.
Prior to Trust No Bitch, obviously. I'm talking about the We Want Easy days.
Yeah, all the time. I'm a huge Eazy-E fan, and he was a big-ass AMG fan, and we was boys, you know. Like, hanging out, smoking weed, hanging out, you know, at the club, at the parties, at the whatever, at the house, whatever. He used to come through, shoot dice with niggas, hang out, kick it. Eazy a real nigga, forever. I'm actually godfather to Aaron Wright, which is his daughter. That's my goddaughter.
Yeah, Evie.
Like my daughter.
Oh, wow.
Since he's been gone. Yeah, so I'm in, you know, I'm close to the family and the kids and stuff like that.
Yeah, most definitely. Was there talks of you possibly signing the Ruthless back in those days? Because I know he had PPC on there.
Yeah, we had Penthouse on there. We talked about doing some things, and because I wasn't happy with Select after my second album. So we talked, I think we talked a few days after Christmas, 95. No, 94. Christmas, 94. Probably like December 27, 28th or something like that. And I hit him up. He hit me. I said, man, let's get some money this year. He's like, let's do it, man, whatever. You know, I got you, you know. And then, you know, March came, and that was all over. So...
Yeah.
If Eazy was still alive, man, there would be so many different things going on out here.
Oh,
you know, in hip hop general, that dude had his hands in movies and video games and all that shit way before anybody else did.
Yeah, he was about to get Greg Mack was saying he was about to get a radio station out there in Phoenix or something.
Probably Ruthless Radio.
Yeah, a lot of things going on. So Ballin' Out of Control might have came out on Ruthless, possibility.
After. You know, I was in talks with Leo Cole and the Def Jam, too. I went to New York to play Leo the album. I just wasn't happy with how it was going with Select. Not they were a bad company, but they weren't as forward-thinking as me, you know, as far as the things I wanted to do. You know, back in the day, I was ready to put two albums out a year. Wasn't nobody really doing that. On that type of level. You know what I mean? It's like, dude, this is hip-hop. They devour it fast. Let's get another one in before the year is over. But they weren't forward-thinking like that. A couple of times I talked to the company and told me, they said, man, we wish we would have listened to you and blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, I know. But, yeah, I know, you know, I knew Eazy and Jerry well. You know, Uncle Jerry's, you know, he's family friend and all that. So, and I'm friends with his nephews and stuff like that and family. So, you know, I knew everybody pretty well.
Yeah, Jerry, we've had him on the show several times before he passed. Hell of a guy, real nice guy. You know what I'm saying? What was he like as a person when you met him?
Same. No transparency. You know.
Oh.
Only time he really got my ass, I was submitting some tracks, and he called me up. Was like, you're not better at stuff than this. I'm like, come on, Jerry. Shit. I'm doing what I can, motherfucker. Let me just, you know. But he was cool, transparent, man. That dude, you know the funny thing about Jerry, after we got to know each other, we used to sit up and talk. And he's from the same area in Cleveland I grew up in. You know, back then, it was an old Jewish neighborhood before my grandparents moved there. He's from the same neighborhood. Yeah, went to the same high school as my mom. You understand? So
wow.
We had a Cleveland connection. Yeah, that's crazy. I was like, get the fuck out here. And then when I read the book, I was like, wow, this is crazy. Yeah, real shit.
Yeah, because he was on the show, he was talking about, like, Danny Green and shit like that, how crazy Cleveland was back in the day.
All the old mobster stories and shit, yeah.
It's like six degrees of separation, man, because, you know, you're connected, you know what I'm saying, to these guys from where you're from. I mean, same thing with Bone. Bone from Cleveland, too. You know, the city is full of talent, man. You know what I'm saying, mess with anybody from Cleveland, do any music with anybody out that way?
Right now, I'm dealing with my cousin, which is Bugsy Kane. He's a producer and artist out of Cleveland. He got a little crew. But they all grew up, you know, we from 114th of St. Clair, Bone up the street, 99th of St. Clair. I think Wish lived on 115th. They was a few years younger than me, and plus I left, you know, back in the day. But, you know, I go back in the summers and shit like that. We was always trying to do something in Cleveland. Because Cleveland, you got a lot of time because it ain't that much going on, especially back in them days. So, you know, I had niggas out there. We'd get on the four track and cut records up, try to make some demos and shit. I work everywhere I go. So I always try shit. I still work in Cleveland now.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
At what point in time did you hook up with Quick, Second to None, and High C and everybody, Tony A?
Well, I think it's about 89. I met Quick. Greg had a demo tape because he still was at Penthouse, but he was working on some solo stuff. And Greg got the tape. We didn't meet him or nothing. Greg got the tape from the guys that ended up getting our deals, which is Total Track Productions, Tracy, Kendrick, and Courtney Branch. So they gave Greg the tape. Me and Greg was Greg used to run speakers and rent equipment and shit and do parties. So I go with him. I'm the side dude carrying records and shit. You know, I get the DJ when he go to the bathroom and shit like that. So we would roll on this tape. We heard, I said, man, this shit's incredible. It's like Black Pussy and a couple other songs on there. And I was like, Greg, you got to get this dude. This is what we need to make everything work. All right, man, I'm going to get him. Greg got a voice like that. He's like, I'm going to get him, man. So after some work, you know, some working and talking and dealings and shit like that, we got a Quick over to the spot. And it was, you know, they call it synergy. You know, we all 18, 19 years old. We on the same level, you know, musically. We all like the same type of shit. And he brought Second over. Then he High C came over and all that stuff. And we just jailed, man. And that became the Red Tape. You know, we've been working our demos. We upgraded our equipment. And then we made some more records and shit like that, which was basically, it could have came out as demos. That's how bad we was with the shit. You know, Quick's an excellent engineer and producer. So that's how it all worked. And then they start shopping the record deals. Quick got signed August, I think, 1990. Album dropped January, Gold in March. We was on the road. Second to None's album was done. I put out Bitch Rap My Money in March. We toured on it. I was out for 3 months on the tour. Jumped off the tour, came back, cut the album, was out in November. That's how 91 went.
Oh, man. Yeah, because I thought, you know what I'm saying, you guys had one, like a West Coast Wu-Tang, you know what I'm saying, before the Wu-Tang was even around. It was kind of like a real dope crew over there. And I always like, man, these guys did a group album because songs like Coming Like This and, you know what I'm saying, some of the other dope tracks. I thought, man, that shit would be incredible. Did you guys ever talk about doing like a group project together back then?
No, because everybody was their own entity. DJ Quick is his brand. AMG's mine, Second to None's their brand, High C is his brand. But we combine the brands and work as a unit. You know, we still tour and work as a unit, even though we're not – and what's funny, recently discussed, is like, you know what, fellas? We've never done a whole crew record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I guess maybe 5-1 is better than 1-5 because I could win 5 times instead of just one big win. You know, quick get a hit, I get a hit, second get a hit, high C get a hit. It helps carry, you know, the dream further. But hopefully we may do, we're working on shit right now, and we got a lot of good stuff. So hopefully, maybe this next run in the next year or two, we could possibly do an EP all together, you know, probably 7 songs, 8 songs, and just put it out, even just for the fans, you know, just to go back to some of the raw elements and just hit them. Because everybody got the same styles and flows and flavors. So I think I would like it my damn self. I'm tired of trying to do AMG records and shit. Like, dude, let's do a crew record. So you never know.
It would be good. And right now is a great time for hip hop because you got Schoolie D just dropped the album. Ice-T's got stuff out there. You know, Gangstar's going to release some stuff from the vault. So it's a good time for the real shit to kind of come back. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think everybody took a break for a second just to see if our era of hip hop was going to be fully respected again. You know, and that starts with the tours. People go out on the road, people come out and see you. So when they come out and see you, go, well, shit, maybe I can give them something and they'll appreciate that so I can keep on touring. Maybe I get a hit off this motherfucker and then I can keep going, you know. So I think it just took a little time for everything to, you know, to get back in place in jail, you know, because you had a whole new movement of new guys, a lot of the Southern stuff, and, you know, from all over the place, people was coming out with heavy shit. It wasn't like hip-hop was lacking. There's a lot of big shit going on, you know.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the OGs get they just do, you know. And nobody's really afraid no more. Everybody's kind of back to square one as far as creating. Like, dude, this is what I do. I might as well go out here and just do what I do. You know, I went through that shit, too, about 4 or 5 years, just like, should I do another record, or who the fuck's go buy it, or who's go care? And then you go, you got so much love for it, you go like, man, I'm just gonna do my shit, do my thing. See what happened. Cube is a great example. You know what I mean? That dude's hardworking. You know, for the dude to have all this shit going on, he got going on, and still hit the road like he's brand new again. That's just crazy.
Yeah, I love
it. It's amazing.
I love
it. It's amazing.
Man, I wish MC Ren would put out more music. You know, and some of the other guys.
I think Ren's coming. I know Ren's coming out with something. You know, we did a show last year in Michigan with Ice Cube and N.W.A. and that shit was incredible. It took me right back to 1989, 1988. I was like, God, this fucking shit, it ain't gonna stop. It was just as powerful and massive as it was when it came out. To see him on stage doing it was crazy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
Another song I really like, we talked about earlier a little bit, Trust No Bitch, Penthouse Players album. You know, man, what was the atmosphere like to record that? Because, you know, nowadays you just send the tracks to everybody and they send it back. But back then, were you guys all in the lab together?
Yeah. Everybody.
What was that like?
Come on, man. AMG, Eazy-E, Penthouse, and Penthouse is a crew. So the whole crew's there. The Hennessy's flowing. The weed is flowing. Might be a couple chicks around. Niggas are shooting dice, talking street shit. It's just fun. Fucking Eazy, he didn't want to do his vocals in front of nobody. It's like, dude, you sat through my fucking session and critiqued me every line. Nah, man, do it like this. You're supposed to say it like this. Blah, blah, blah. Right? So when it's time for him to get in there, he want to kick everybody out. Quick was like, man, just let him do his shit. I was like, man, all right, fuck it. So he did his shit. And then we banged it out. And that was a day in the life. And we did it in one day.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's a classic. Record right there.
Yeah.
You know,
Trust No Bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had to put that in Eazy-E's greatest hits because that definitely was one of them, you know.
Yes, sir. He made a way for all that to happen. He was very involved in Penthouse's project, hands on, you know, every video, every fucking time they was in public, he was with them. So that was the genius of him to place himself in that element and rock with them. You know what I mean? It wasn't like he just wrote a check and was like, all right, y'all get this shit done. Nah, always around. Anytime you called him and needed him, he was always there. He was a true executive.
Yeah, everybody I talked to over the years, they always said that Eazy-E was just a straight up stand up dude, and he was real as hell. You know,
you can't get an empire like that slacking. You know, not at all.
Yeah,
I've seen this dude leave a spot three, four in the morning and show up for the meeting at 9 o'clock in the morning. Like it's no sweat.
Hell yeah. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do, AMG, real quick. We're going to go to a break, then we're going to come back and chop it up a little bit more. You know, one of my favorite songs off the album, of course, Bitch Better Have My Money, but I always love Vertical Joyride, man. That song, I mean, I've been smoking that song for almost 30 years now. What's the deal with that song before we play? Can you kind of break that down for us?
Vertical? Okay,
yeah.
A vertical joyride is when you get really high and you got some pussy right in front of your face. That's the vertical joyride.
Hell yeah, man.
And
I love
and just explain it.
Too.
Oh, yeah.
That was
Easy's favorite song. Man, you flipped that worm, man. Yeah. He liked when I flipped the funky worm and shit. But, yeah, man, conceptually, that was during my whole smoking weed. My best friend Kev 304, he came up with the hit, "Don't Babysit It," and I made the beat. And what happened was in the SB12, you only had so much sampling time and shit. So I got the first part of the worm off, right? And the reverse part, that wow at the end of it, I had to reverse it because it wasn't matching with the rest of the sample. It wasn't coming in on time. The beat was off. So I reversed it to make it go right back into the sequence. So that's how it turned out. But me and this nigga got so high and made the beat. We danced to the shit for like 3 hours before I even wrote a verse. It was just so much fun to listen to. We was loaded, bro. We was in my bedroom.
You guys were lost
the
in the sauce, man. You guys were.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah,
on my
man. This is
in the middle of the day, dancing.
It's a classic. We'll be right back right here with AMG and the Murder Master Music Show. Don't go nowhere.
Yeah.
Record is timeless. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you could drop that right now, and it's like time stood still. You know, so you get a lot of people talking about that record.
Yeah, they want to know how I could walk, jump in my ear and walk through my mind. How did you write that? I said, nigga, I was high as fuck. That's how I was feeling. That's how good that shit was. Yeah. I enjoyed it, man. I enjoyed being creative, man, and coming up with stuff. That helps me.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know what I'm saying? It's something different. You didn't hear nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that whole album,
that's,
though, too,
that's
man.
That's why I put it first. Let me tell you, the record company wanted my concept for my album. See, Bitch Grab My Money took on a life of its own because everybody heard it but never seen it. Now, the album title was Vertical Joyride, the Vertical Joyride. The company, they were so geeked off Bitch Grab My Money, and they was like, well, let's just call the album Bitch Grab My Money. I'm like, no, you go fuck up my concept. You know what I mean? I'm a record. That's how I had it with the jeans and shit, Vertical Joyride. They changed it to Bitch Grab My Money. And tried to keep selling Bitch Grab My Money through the whole time I was trying to promote the rest of the records on the album. So it never got the full Just Do that it's supposed to get. So now I'm just the Bitch Grab My Money game, man. That's what they did.
Yeah, because there's so much more to the album.
Yeah, they were being corporate when I was being creative.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because, I mean, when you listen to it as a whole, I mean, there's so many different sounds, styles, and the dope part about it was, you know, anybody can get into it. You know what I'm saying? You could be from the East, the Midwest, the West, the South. That was a record I think that everybody loved.
Well, those were all my influences growing up. First and foremost, East Coast hip-hop, then West Coast hip-hop. So that's a combination. You know, I come from the real MCs, you know, the KRSs, and the, you know, I didn't rap like AMG when I started. You know, I was more of a battle rapper, or, you know, I was the extreme flow master and all that shit, you know, get my skills together. And then basically from being in L.A. and seeing all that stuff, you know, they made records that were more, they were a lot of imagery involved. You know what I mean? Like, it take you right to the place, you know what I mean, and give you the right visuals that you could hear. You know, we working, you know, with sonics and audio, so whatever's going in your ear got to be visual at the end of the day to make these records work, you know. Same thing with, like, Tonight, you know, Quick Tonight, to tell the story. It puts you in the mood, puts you in the party, puts you right there where it is. So that helped. And then, you know, when we went on tour, you know, while that Rich Bama Money was brewing as a single, I got to hit all these towns. You know, I got to be in, you know, Houston, I got to be in Atlanta. I got to be in Detroit. I got to be in Minneapolis. So as I'm going through all this stuff, I'm picking up different flavors too. Like, okay, they like this type of shit. Okay, they like this type of shit. So I just went back home and matched up my tracks and tried to make them type of records that would appeal to those type of places too. So it would be a whole little, you know, little grab bag of stuff. You know, everything ain't for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, plus you did the video and song with Second to None, Let the Rhythm Take You. That was more of a real laid-back type of song, you know. What was the perception of that song, you know what I'm saying, compared to, you know, everybody was probably expecting songs like, you know, Bitch Better Have My Money and stuff like that. How did people feel about that particular song, though?
Well, that's on Second's album. That was on their album. Me and Dion did the track, right?
Yeah.
We did the track, and we were using a DLC sample. Let the rhythm take you. Let the rhythm take you. But then we came up with the hook, and Quick refreaked the beat and played the bass line on it and the keys and shit. So it just turned into another masterpiece. I was surprised when they even made it a single for Second, because, you know, they were coming from that street hardcore, not really hardcore, but like street, more street talk. That shit was more like street knowledge. You know, they had Be True to Yourself and What Goes Up Must Come Down, one of my favorite records.
Punk Motherfuckers.
And, Punk Motherfuckers. Yeah, you know, they had that real good shit for the streets. But Let the Rhythm Take You, I guess they was going for a radio record, and people loved that fucking record. And it was just so much fun making that video, making all that shit happen, because it showed it in a different light. We was at the beach, we was in Malibu with the girls and all that stuff. So always an awesome time with Second to None.
Yeah, and these guys, you know what I'm saying, and yourself, you know, the dope part about it is all these years later, I mean, you guys are still here, you know what I'm saying, and there's no better time than now than for you guys to come back out, really just put your stamp on things again, man, you know? You got something coming in 2020?
Yeah. We've been in the studio, shit, what is it now, October, last 6 months. Yeah, we crazy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we got some shit. Trust me, and I wouldn't even lie on that. I wouldn't say if it wasn't what I thought it could be, I wouldn't say anything. But yeah, we got some shit. Trust me.
Oh man, that's what I'm talking about. You know, because I know
there's
the fans are definitely waiting.
Everybody on point. We just did a big concert out here the other day called "How the West Was Won," with Snoop, The Game, us, Exhibit, Warren G. You know, huge concert, sold out, 20,000 people. And went up there and murdered it for 45 minutes. And did
wow.
A new song. So, yeah, they ready.
Most definitely. I got the homie from France, Sin. I know he's got a couple questions for you real quick, AMG. I'm going to bring him on real
okay.
quick. Sin, you there, brother?
Yes, sir. Hi, Scott. Hi, AMG. Legendary.
What's up? What's up?
Yeah, so can you tell us about your song back in the day, A Trunk of Funk? Just dope song on your first album.
Thank you. One of my favorites.
Oh, yeah?
What you want to know?
Can you tell us about this? Yeah, about this one, about the production and how you came into the idea of the track.
How I made it? I wanted something that showed that I could flow. You know, the whole call me the new hoe on the block. I'm talking about the record business. Some may like me, some do not. I get paid, get laid all kinds of ways. Smoothed out fade with a knack for whole rap. I'm introducing myself as a rapper too, not just as some nigga cussing on the song. I took a substitution breakbeat and I used I think it's called Atmosphere from Funkadelic. And I just reversed it. That was the Janine sample that the sample I used on Janine. I just reversed it and put it on Trunk of Funk. But I was just having fun lyrically with it and talking shit, you know, having a ball. Ice, he told me that's one of his favorite
talent.
Songs too. Yeah. I just wanted to get some lyrics off real quick to let niggas know it wasn't just about pussy and hoes and all that shit, but you know. I'm glad you enjoyed it, my brother.
We,
I appreciate that.
Yeah, we can feel the P-Funk style.
Yeah.
The P-Funk style. Yeah. You got also a classic song, Around the World, of course. Can you tell us about this one? And
been around the
video
world.
And, yeah, it was a classic.
Thank you so much.
How it was to do this song.
I produced that. I used the samples from The Wiz. The song the 10 man sings called What Can I Do If I Could Feel. That's the do-do-do-do. And I wrapped it with some, you know, like some jazz break beats and shit. I was trying to make like a Tribe Called Quest sounding type record, you know, and just explaining where I was, because that was the first thing on the second album, explaining what I've been through, and people was taking it, the concept of it, the wrong way. I'm just saying I've been around the world and it's a million girls, meaning that they could be distractions and get you off your game, you know. Telling the stories about life and love and just growing up and, you know, this type of business and hip-hop and what you go through, you know, dealing with that. You know, shot the fly-ass video in Malibu with the Benzo and the helicopter, and I had the waves flowing, the pretty girls going. It was, my company was against it because they was like, well, it's going to be too mature for your audience and all that. It's like, dude, our audience got to grow with us. If they don't grow with
yeah.
you, that means that they ain't fucking with you, you know. So I just tried to offer something different for the second record. I didn't want to come back out with the same shit because I just wasn't there. I did 4 years of that prior to the 2 years of setting it up. So you're talking about 6 years in the same mode, you know, artistically. I wanted to do something different, you know, to showcase a little something else, man.
That was,
yeah.
I think, one of the most slept-on albums in 95 because it was thorough all the way through. You didn't have to skip nothing.
I work real hard on it.
Yeah. I was so happy when it came out, too, because I was like, man, where? In my mind, I was thinking, where's Second to None? Where's AMG? High C just dropped the record a couple years prior. I was like, man, I need this shit. And then when that came out, man, I was like all amped up. I had to go get it right away, you know. But when it dropped, after it dropped, you know what I'm saying, what did you do after that for a couple years? Because the next time I heard you after that was, I believe, on Rhythmalism.
Rhythmalism, I think I dropped a single. It was a shitty single. I was just trying to get off the company, and they was just giving me a whole lot of grief. You know, after Balling Out of Control didn't do what they wanted to do because they kept fucking up the marketing. Because Around the World was first. The second single was going to be Leather and Wood, which I had a remix to using Marvin Gaye's Sexual Healing. Straight radio record, you know, because you got to remember, 95, huge radio records. You know, Big Papa, all these other shits. I wanted that same vein for my shit, you know, just to elevate. So due to some shit going on with the company, they never executed the complete marketing plan fully. So because that record came out summer of 95. By December, it was almost dead as a doorknob to them. So the year after that, I think 96, I think we worked a single release and all that shit. But they never really got behind it again, and they regret it to this day. And that's no lie. They regret it because they know they dropped the ball on something that could have worked. It's like, look, we're supposed to go out and get the same numbers. They're not going to be the same records, but we're still supposed to go out and get the same numbers. Because I worked twice as hard as I ever worked on anything on that record. Because I did it all myself. You know, everybody was kind of doing their own thing anyway and all that shit. So, you know, it was my turn to go out here and just try to make whatever I was trying to do, make it happen. And push it through. But, you know, the politics of the game change. The fans change with every hit. You know what I mean? So hip-hop was just a different game after that. But then me and Quick got back in the studio, I think, 96. We did a song for a guy we knew called Break Bread. And then he played me some stuff he was going to do for Rhythmalism. He's like, I want to get you on this. I want to get you on a song called Speed. I said, all right, let's do it. So we went and got a couple six-packs and started recording. So that's
Speed
that was the beginning of
a hell of a song.
Yeah, man, that was the first song me and him did on Rhythmalism. Then we did I Used to Know Her, and then we did the Crew song, the Melody 4V, and some other shit. You know, it came together nicely. Rhythmalism is a huge record.
Yeah.
So yeah,
one of my favorite Quick albums, easily.
Yeah, that, one of mine too. I think the first album of Rhythmalism is my favorite. Then after that, I was shopping deals. You know, I was trying to shop a deal, and I wasn't getting no bites. You know, I was everywhere. I was at Interscope. I was at Universal. I was everywhere. They wasn't biting on me. Like, I was played out and done, you know. So, I think by 2000, I got a distribution deal through a company called Lightyear, which went through Warner's. So, it allowed me to be a company owner for the first time, you know, like a record company owner. And do the real splits and all that. And I put out Bitch Rabble Money 2001, which was cool. You know, I was just putting out there and throw something out, shit I've been working on. And I did two albums on there. But I got a little discouraged with all this shit, so I took another break till we did The Fixes in 2007. Can you work with that?
Yeah, The Fixes.
Yeah.
Now, that album, did it drop or was it leaked? Because I heard that it was leaked or...
Yeah, but that was a kind of false leak. It was from the inside. It was bad. So I salvaged the album and put it on iTunes. It's been on iTunes since 2008. I'm like, y'all didn't ever look it up on iTunes? They're like, where can I get it? Been on iTunes for 10 years. You know.
Huh. Yeah.
It's been on sale.
No, I was just going to say, it's a shame that, you know, records like that and Balling Out of Control, the people in the offices or whatever didn't get behind it and push it the way it should have been, you know?
Right.
Because.
Well, Can You Work With That? We had a single deal with Interscope. They didn't want to take no chance on those 36-year-old rappers. But then it blew, and they supported us in every way, you know. But by the time it came to do the album budget, we was trying to get a little more, and we have interest from Warner Brothers also. But we couldn't breach the contract because Interscope had first rights of refusal, meaning they have to turn it down first for us to shop it elsewhere. Then it became a management issue, and that's when the so-called leak happened. And he didn't do nothing but put it on MySpace and shit, and we pulled it down. But, it just got weird and whack. So, you know, I had to salvage the whole project. and just throw it out there for whoever wanted. You know, it's a missed opportunity that should have been, because it was an awesome project. We made a big ass record, a big fucking hit, you know, all over the place in the media, tons of magazine interviews and all that shit.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
I'm halfway disappointed, but I'm happy that I at least got to salvage it and put it out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, man. Well, I'm real excited to know that you guys got music coming, you know, real soon. You know, definitely looking forward to that. And again, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to do this interview. I just got a couple more questions for you, AMG. Looking back at your career, you know what I'm saying, what would you say are some of the fondest memories that you have?
It's too many to name, man. You know, the number one, really, is probably being the guy that was at the end of the line trying to get into the club 1 week. And the next week, they were rushing us through the back to the VIP section. So that's always one. Because, you know, my record wasn't on the radio and nothing like that. So I would just gig just to watch 2,000 people losing their minds on a dance floor to it, because that's what I made it for, the party to. And, you know, just, you know, when you bring home your first record or you get your first plaque and all that shit, you know, that's always awesome.
Yeah.
Always awesome.
Oh, yeah.
So those are things that I'll never, ever, ever forget, because, you know, and as the years have gone on, sometimes I'll go back and listen to old stuff and look through old stuff, and it's like, wow, I did a lot of shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I did a lot of work. You know, everybody don't know how much work that goes on behind making all these types of things happen. You know, I've written songs I never got credit for. I've directed videos and produced videos and things I never got credit for. So I know how much work I did. You know what I mean? And I'm still working, you know. We got some heavy shit about to come out too. So yeah, everything that's success, even some of the sad stories and situations that we persevered through that made us happy, and you know, like you know, we proud of ourselves, because like you said, we still here trying to get it, man. You know, and it's from another level, because we all grown men now, you know, a lot of my fellas, they got families and some of them granddaddies and shit, so hey. Got to live the dream.
Well, you say you when you say you got stuff coming, are you talking about, like, you got a solo project or is it collaborative projects? Is there anything you can talk about, or is it kind of under wraps?
Everybody got records coming out. I don't say nothing until everything's mixed and done, but everybody got records coming out. And you go like,
oh, hell yeah.
It ain't going to be no shit where you can be like, oh, man, it's going to be some shit like, God damn. You know what I'm saying? Trust me.
Hell yeah, man. I can't
can you
wait.
Tell us what can you tell us what's happened with DJ Quick and the fixers, the case about that? Can you tell us about Zach Banks today?
He said what now?
The Fixers album? He was just talking about that.
Yeah, with DJ Quick, yes. Can you tell us about this one Banks today?
By the way?
What's happened? What's happened with the Fixers and DJ Quick back the day with your work with him?
Oh,
what did he say?
I think he just wanted to know about the Fixers project when you were working with Quick.
Yes, sir.
Like how it all went down and everything.
That's a long story, but basically it was just managerial issues that went wild. And you know, we did a lot of work. Like we were by 07, hip hop was changing again to where everybody has a blog, everybody has a magazine, everybody. We did so much press and so much shit to promote that one single. I've never worked that hard in my life for one record. You know, it's like we worked two albums in one single. So the pressure of that, the pressure of really. We had a home at Interscope, but we didn't have the album deal we wanted. Now, as we toured and promoted that record, we were working on the album. We could get off the road and get right back in the studio. You know what I mean? Work on the songs. On that album, we had, who we have at the time? We had Young Bird, got Jim Jones on it, Twister's on it, shit. A couple other motherfuckers, Frankie J, I'm sorry. And I think we had I can't remember. It was Young Jock or somebody. We had something, man. We did a song for Young Jock called Cutthroat that came out on his second album. We was doing a lot of work. We had Rick Ross in the studio trying to sell him beats. So we were operating as a label, a rap group, and a production company. So all of that pressure and that work just had everybody just burnt to the core. And then when the managerial issues came up and that dude went out there and leaked the record and shit, it kind of just fucked everybody's shit up. So we kind of just disbanded. Just like, you know, because that was about a year and a half worth of work. You know, that year we did about 250 fucking shows. You know, we was always on the road. So that type of shit just leaves you just high and dry and going like, man, I need a break. You know, that's why I said, that's why I salvaged the record. I said, I'm just going to put out what we got. And all the records ain't even full mixes and shit, but I know the people want to hear it. So I put that motherfucker together and put it out, finished it up. And we never promoted it. It's just living on iTunes.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Hopefully, revive it. You know what I'm saying? Maybe you guys could, you know, re-release a new edition or something. But, I'm so amped up when you guys got four albums or four projects. Mm-hmm. I mean, what about Penthouse Players? Are they coming? Do you know if they're dropping anything too this year or coming year?
I'm in L.A. right now. I've been here for about a week. I've been trying to get in touch with Player Ham just to talk and see what's going on. You know, he has his sons, our young boys, called the Young Giants. Those are Player Ham's sons, so look out for them and support them also. I'm sure Ham would love to get back in the studio, I'm sure. You know, it's got to be the right thing, right time. You got a lot of personalities, a lot of different schedules and shit. Every time we're in the studio, it may be me and Second to None and Quick, or sometimes it's Quick and High C and Sugar Free, and sometimes it's, you know, it's rarely that we're all together at one time making shit happen in the studio. So I'll hear a song and be like, okay, let me get on that shit. You know what I mean? They'll hear a song, I'm on, they get on it, whatever, if I'm not there, you know. And that's how we work. We just keep it going until it's done.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's more of a scheduling thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping, you know what I'm saying, it goes down like that because all this great shit's coming out. Might as well have the Class of 91 come out too, you know.
Yes, sir.
But huge, huge honor, man. Before we do get out of here, if cats want to, you know what I'm saying, get at you for verses, productions, shows, what's the best way they can reach you, man? Social media? You got the platform, bro.
Yeah. No, Instagram. Most people hit me on Instagram. I'm at the AMG Show. That's the name. So just hit me up on there.
Yeah. Most definitely. Most definitely. Well, thanks again, for coming on the show, talking to us. And, when you guys drop next year, if you don't care, man, let's bring you back on. You know, play a couple tracks, chop it up again.
Awesomely done. Will do.
Man, that's what I'm talking about. Well, as we get out of here, AMG, I'm going to let everybody check out this dope track, Around the World, that Sin brought up earlier, man. It's a classic.
Thanks again,
brother. Take care, AMG.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate y'all, man. Love y'all. One.
Much respect.
Hi, Daddy. It's Nicole. When are you coming home? I miss you, baby.
I've been around the world.